Well, I can tell you this is unprecedented, 100% shutdown in the beginning. All of us will remember March 11th, 2020.
Sometimes I'll meet an assistant and they're like, I really want to be making t-shirts. And I'm like, oh, well, don't, why are you doing this?
I think as long as both sides are on board with both the environmentalists, the organized labor, and the progressives, and the political capital community, if everyone just works together and takes an inches towards it, we're on the right track.
Yes, it is ugly. It's got big teeth. It's got whiskers. It's got pus spots and stuff. It's got long claws. But you can bet everybody stops and wants to know what's going on.
Hey, we don't know, like, where are our people? What do they think, actually?
Welcome to the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, our roundup of highlights from some of the more than 100 shows that make up the Labor Radio Podcast Network. On today's show, we talk with stagehands who have been out of work since November of last year. Saved by the Bell writer Tracy Wigfield on getting into showbiz, the mine workers get on board with green energy jobs, Scabby the Rat is back, escaping the trap set by bad bosses and their friends in the Trump administration. And we talk union democracy and organizing with Mary Beth Seitz Brown. We've got reports today from Labor Radio on KBOO, Third and Fairfax podcast from the Writers Guild of America West, UCOM Live, the Heartland Labor Forum, Labor Wave Radio, and Labor Lines. I'm Chris Bangert Drowns for the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly. Here's the show.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Amanda Hill, here with my co-host Jamie Partridge. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Amanda.
How's it going?
Another day in paradise.
Exactly. Tonight we're here talking with Rosetta Venetucci, business representative of IOTSI Local 28. Welcome to Labor Radio, Rosetta.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you. IOTSI 28 has been in a protracted battle with the Rip City management, the employer of the stagehands who have worked for the Portland Trailblazer games from the beginning. Since 1974, they want to get their stagehand work back. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, of course, the basketball team used managers to run the limited show. And now that crowds are back in the arena, union stagehands are still excluded on all of their previous positions. So as I understand the story, just prior to the pandemic, management insisted on getting trained by union stagehands on how to run the arena in case of an emergency. And now it seems like they just used the pandemic as an excuse to have the Trailblazer and Winterhawk games not staffed with represented workers of the union. Am I right?
Well, this is the way the crew feels. For example, the primary sound engineer that does all the Trailblazers games was asked to train one of the managers in case of an emergency. One time we had an emergency, John, he would take care of the referees with scoring, the clock, things like that. He missed one game in 25 years and they thought, oh, well, maybe, you know, that was due to a family emergency. One time, 25 years. So they thought, well, the managers should be trained in case there's an emergency or if it's last minute, we can't bring somebody in. It made sense. But now, yeah, it turns out that same manager or two, they're now doing our jobs and they've trained the newest person that came on right before the pandemic.
Oh, so this pandemic that's put the great majority of your members out of work, how has the union responded to this situation?
Well, I can tell you this is unprecedented, 100% shutdown in the beginning. All of us will remember March 11th, 2020. I can tell you that day, Tool was at the Moda Center. Frozen had a show at the Keller. And we had a lot of people working just between those two events. And everyone, it was just kind of shocking because we knew that the governor was having a press conference the morning of the 12th at 11 o'clock. But as you remember, we all got the information the night before that everything was going to get shut down. So, you know, after the shows, everyone closed up and we all wondered, wow, are we going to be out of work for a week or 2 weeks? And Tool was supposed to go to Eugene and load into the Holt Center. And they, you know, because we got the information beforehand, that show was not loaded in and it just got to its trucks and left town, unlike other shows that got trapped in the theaters because we were shut down. So our local specifically, so Local 28, early in the pandemic, we started an army of volunteers making masks. One of our members, Rebecca Lewis, headed up mask making. We have a lot of stagehands who sew because of what we do. And a lot of them jumped right into making masks, and not just the wardrobe workers. We had riggers making masks. We had AV workers making masks. We had them on school bus drivers. Back when the school bus drivers were delivering meals to kids, TriMet bus drivers didn't have masks. We sent them to hospitals, shelters, anybody that asked for masks, we got the mask. We made kids size masks. There was a group that was organizing a BLM march, and it was being organized by kids, for kids and families. We got them masks, and we made sure everybody who wanted to participate had a mask. Then we started the food pantry at the office. We started collecting food from people who could give and getting it to people in need. Then the fire started. Our local in Ashland, 154, on top of a pandemic, an industry shutdown, we had members losing their houses to the fires. We had displaced workers everywhere. We have people in their cars. We have people not only needing food and water, places for their animals, places to charge their phones. So we had lots of members showing up at the office, and we figured out how we helped them. And then, as you know, workers helping workers, we're doing great food box drives, and they took care of us. They made sure that we had, oh my gosh, Jamie, all the boxes that we could handle. They made sure we had enough food boxes to get to all of our workers. We got food boxes for Local 28, for Local B20, for Local 488. We got boxes sent down to Ashland, boxes to Salem, boxes to Vancouver. I got to thank the labor movement for really those who could help have helped and continue to help.
Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, Rosetta. It's been an amazing story you've told to us this evening.
Yeah, and that about wraps it up for tonight's Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday from 6 to 6:30 on KBOO 90.7 FM.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate both of you very much, and I appreciate your show.
And you've been listening to Rosetta Vettitucci, the business representative of the International Alliance Theatrical Stage Employees, Local 28. I'm Jamie Partridge. My co-host is Amanda Hill.
Welcome back to Third and Fairfax. This is Monique Sorgan, and I am here today with Tracy Wigfield, who is an Emmy Award-winning writer and is currently working on the new iteration of Saved by the Bell. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well today.
Sometimes I'll meet an assistant and they're like, I really want to be making t-shirts. And I'm like, oh, well, why are you doing this? Or it's like, I'm just kind of like doing this for now, but I'm like getting married next year and I want to have kids. So like, I don't really care about this. Like, it's not always the case that you're like, I will die if I can't like get staffed soon. So I think you have to say it or else people, you know, can kind of ignore it because they have a million other things to worry about.
How did you though figure out that you wanted to be a writer?
Kay Cannon, who's a friend of mine, who was like a writer on the show. And I remember being like pretty helpful. Like I was like, I mean, she was like, you have to write a spec. And I wrote a 30 Rock spec earlier that was like really bad when I first started there. And she read it and like gave me notes on it and stuff. So I think like, yeah, that I knew that's what you do to get hired for a job. I knew you had to have something, but it's amazing still, like this happens all the time that like I'll meet someone who's funny or something and be like, oh, do you have a it's crazy because it's like, I know like some people are so prepared and some people are not, but like people that I'll be like, oh, do you have a spec? And they'll be like, I don't. And it's like, well, just have one. Of course, not a spec, a pilot, but just like have one, of course, if you want to write, because it's like, you, even if you're so funny in person, it's like some, just to justify hiring someone, you have to have something to read.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. Okay. So then you get an Emmy and then I imagine more people are calling.
Yeah. So, and I got that Emmy right at the end of 30 Rock and I was kind of already, yeah. I mean, I guess, did it change that much? I guess it did. I like after 30 Rock, I feel like I had a lot of offers for stuff, like not a lot of stuff in New York, honestly, just because there weren't that many shows. But I, you know,
were you hoping to stay in New York?
I was.
Did you kind of know that you're gonna have to move to LA?
And I remember touring gross like guest houses and stuff. Like this got some like guest house in the hills where this guy was clearly like making porn in this house and had my guest house was like where he kept his motorcycle, so there would just have to be like a motorcycle in the middle of like my living space. And he was like, I was saying I'm just here for like a couple months. He's like, no, you'll stay forever. And I was like, I won't. And then I was like, no, the motorcycle guy was
he
right.
Sounds like me. If you're here long enough, you know, when people say 3 months, you're like, yeah, right.
Like, sure. There were definitely like doors opening to me even before the Emmy, but because I was on for so many seasons this show. So I definitely, yeah, was getting like opportunities and stuff. And then I was a writer on Mindy. I came in the middle of their first season when the Emmys happened. And I mean, I think I got a lot of meetings and stuff. And I mean, it's different now. Like everyone is just developing everything, even if they, you know, got out of college yesterday. But back then, it's not that long ago, it did feel like I was getting the advice and I was feeling for myself like, oh, you're not ready to run a show yet, certainly. Like you know, even when I was like, on the first season of Mindy, I was like 29 or something. And I felt like my reps, but also like, I felt like, yeah, why not wait a couple years? So I really didn't develop anything like the first season or second season. I believe it was the third season of Mindy that I developed Great News, and then it got picked up. And so I left Mindy to go run that.
Did you grow up on Saved by the Bell?
I
was
did.
It something
I was
you
like
watched?
The show I watched every kind of, you know, in a way, like both loving it and making fun of it. It was like a show I watched every day after school for, I feel like, for like 20 years, like for all of my childhood, it was on in repeats. And at the time the rights were, they were kind of thinking of doing something with it. And then they didn't. And so right when I was finishing on Four Weddings, I know Perlina from Universal called me and was like, if you're still interested, like those rights are available. And I was like, you know, just in that place where you like need to have ideas to develop, but you have zero. So I was like, yep, sounds like one of them. So I was like, that sounds fun. I'll do that. And it happened really quickly then. Like I came up with an idea and it moved really fast. Like I pitched it to them and then we pitched it to Peacock like a couple weeks later.
Wait, what was I wasn't really into the original Saved by the Bell, you know, and I do like multicam, but it just wasn't my thing. I think I had just like grown beyond that. I was like onto like Scrubs or whatever was going on at the time,
yeah,
you know. But so I wasn't really expecting to like it, but I had heard people saying like, oh, it's really good. And so I like just sampled it and I was like, oh my God, I have to watch this whole thing. But the reason is because, cool. I mean, you know, I'm from an education family. My sister works in education. She runs a charter school, a public charter school in LA. And we're always talking about like how impossible the education problem is because you have this battle between who's more important, the students or the teachers. And according to the unions, it's the teachers, but according to the parents, it's the students and the parents are also coming at the teachers, you know, and could potentially get them fired at any moment because, you know, which is why the union is good, but then the union is bad because they're putting the teachers' needs before the students' needs and then no one's getting an education. Right. So there's this like kind of impossible trifecta going on in education. And I felt like you really managed to tackle that and be so funny about it.
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
Again, we're here with Tracy Wakefield, who is currently doing the new iteration of Saved by the Bell, which everyone should watch.
If you have questions, thoughts, or concerns, you can email us at podcast@wga.org. Please subscribe. Give us written reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or whatever podcatching service you use. And for the entire podcasting team, thanks for listening.
Labor news show on, in, and around the internet. Now here's your host, Chris LaGrange.
Mine workers are on board with the green energy jobs. Teamsters making headlines on CEO pay. And Amazon organizing is tied in to their national union election. Biden is kicking ass with promoting his union task force and strategizing with the IBEW. The AFL-CIO continues to work with the cop unions. Dems say no money unless you get the PRO Act. And will somebody please talk some sense into Aaron Rodgers? What's up, everybody? It's UConn Live with me, Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, workforce, politics, most controversial union news show on, in, and around the internet. The mine workers, right? This is what they said. Change is coming whether we seek it or not. Addressing specifically what change must be addressed, which is them keeping jobs, right? Yeah. We must act while acting in a way that has real positive impact on people who are most affected by this change, said the United Mine Workers in a statement. What are they talking about? Know-it-all, Brian.
They're talking about President Biden's green energy plan. They came out in support of it because, frankly, they realize that coal jobs are dying and they're going away. And
by 2040, I mean, it's 2021.
Yeah.
By 2040, we're hoping to be a coal-free country.
Yep.
We're always going to be burning coal no matter what. And we can tell this to the environmentalists, to be honest with them, or we can lie to them. We're always going to burn coal. And there's clean coal technologies. I know that for a fact. But, I mean, it's just a dirty word. It's a dirty product. It's a dirty word. So the mine workers are smart to get on this, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And they're asking Congress to provide funds to retrain their miners for good paying jobs.
Yep.
And that's the key, folks. All of you unionists out there who, you're maybe your national, your local, your international is not communicating to you properly how a bill becomes law, how policy changes. If you're not at the table, you're on the freaking menu. And your union leadership can't just fold their arms and hoop and holler and walk away and say, guess what, we're going to vote Republican now. Well, you're going to be not only not at the table anymore and out of a job, you're going to be on the FBI's most wanted list. Ask the Capitol Insurgents on January 6th if that's the right party to be in right now. Right, the IBEW has been at the table the entire time. So much that the president is strategizing with them on how to move this country forward, not just on green energy, but on jobs and on everything. And I think as long as both sides are on board with it, both the environmentalists, the organized labor, and the progressives, and the political capital community, if everyone just works together and takes an inches towards it, we're on the right track. Okay, we're done. Good enough show. Good job, Lewis. Instagram folks, good enough job. So remember, the only crime you can commit is doing nothing. So speak up with injustice incurs. Care more about your kids and your community and less about your guns, because your guns will never love you back. Thanks for stopping by, America. And to the good people of Vancouver, Washington, I'm Chris LaGrange. This was UCOM Live, and we'll try this again in a few weeks.
Okay. Bye.
Singling on, and by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill. Singling on, singling on.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City.
We'd like to welcome our listeners to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm your host, Michael Savoie, and our show tonight is titled Long Live Scabby the Rat, or Viva La Rata. My guest tonight is Richard DeVries. Richard has been a union representative with Teamsters Local 705 in Chicago for over 25 years. He goes way back to the national UPS strike, where he organized groups of ambulatory pickets who successfully got lots of customers' cancellations of scabs. Multiple times he's put up the rat and wants to tell us about it. Good evening, Richard. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm really excited to talk about this because the rat has been center focus of Trump's labor board for the last 4 years. We're on the bright side of things because the guy who was most squeamish about the rat was Rob, the general counsel. Peter Robb absolutely hated the rat. He actually has it in his DNA. Peter Robb was the fellow who was Ronald Reagan's point man on the traffic controller strike about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
He was the guy that stole these people's livelihood and made sure they were blacklisted all over the country. He's kind of an evil guy. However, equally squeamish was that he did not like the rat. The nature of labor law changed with the Taft-Hartley Act, which prohibited unions from engaging in secondary activities. We're only allowed to picket primary employers whom we're having a labor dispute. Well, as I was just explaining, we're not allowed to talk to those secondary employers. So how do we get the message out to the public? Back around 1989, a Chicago area union, the operating engineers, they went and bought themselves a homemade inflatable rat. It was about 10 foot tall, and they put it on top of their car, which was called the Rat Chaser. And they would go to construction sites, they would go to various employers, corporate offices, and inflate this rat. Why? Well, first of all, yes, it is ugly. It's got big teeth, it's got whiskers, it's got pus spots and stuff, it's got long claws. But you can bet everybody stops and wants to know what's going on. This gave us the opportunity to hand out a leaflet and inform the public. Well, Peter Robb felt that that was coercive. I can assure you it's not. The test I did was with my daughter's grammar school group. When her grammar school was ready to go on strike, the other teachers said, bring the rat out, bring the rat out. So, yeah, I had to oblige them. I brought the rat out there. And all these grammar school kids did not find it coercive. They did not find it offensive. They wanted their pictures taken with the rat. It had exact effect that we wanted, even at my daughter's school. Every parent stopped and wanted to know what was going on. And that was what the goal of this rat was. Our local has rats as small as 6 feet tall, from when we're in little tight spaces to about a 15-foot rat. The biggest rat I have ever seen was nearly 60 feet tall. Took a giant generator and blower to inflate, mm-hmm. but you could see it from the interstate highway, and that was exactly what the folks wanted to have.
Richard, tell our listeners why corporate America finds the rat so threatening. Obviously, your daughter sees the rat as a friend of labor.
Well, that is exactly why corporate America hates it. We don't need to be on strike to take that rat to a stockholders meeting. We don't need to be on strike to take it and park it in front of the CEO's house or country club. Yeah, I'm going to say I'm not ashamed of myself. I did park it once in front of the CEO's church. I know that was a little bit controversial, but, you know, Michael, you've got me on national radio. I may as well make my confessions to you now.
Richard, well, tell our listeners the current status of the injunction against Scabby. I know there's still a couple of cases that are pending in court, right?
Well, I don't want to say that President Biden has turned the ship of state around. However, on January 20th, he did something that has not happened since the early 1950s. The last president to fire a general counsel to the National Labor Relations Board was Harry S. Truman. Mr. President Biden has taken the liberty on January 20th of dumping Peter Robb as general counsel, and the appointee that he has put in as interim director, Peter Sung-Yong Oh, is from Region 13. He's from Chicago. Mm-hmm. I want to say we're really proud of Peter because he has step-by-step systematically started addressing all of the bad directives, the anti-union directives that were coming out of Peter Robb and the Trump office. So I'm looking for a much brighter future where we will see a blossoming of Scabby the Rats this spring.
Well, Richard, I think that we can sleep better at night knowing that our freedom fighter, Scabby the Rat, will be back on the scene with the passing of time. I'm optimistic that Scabby will resume his rightful place, man, exposing corporate America's shortcomings.
And I thank you for giving me the opportunity to let everybody know what Scabby's real business out there is.
The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Jen Zaman. Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss, and you can talk back too. Send us your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to heartlandlaborforumkkfi@gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming schedule, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening to the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 o'clock or to our Friday morning rebroadcast at 5 o'clock right here at 90.1 FM KKFI. To struggle and
This is Labor Wave Radio. Mary Beth Seitz Brown, welcome to Labor Wave. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So you wrote an article for The Forge. I think their subtitle is Organizing and Strategy, but The Forge online magazine, called The Left Needs to Engage Members If We Want to Win Big. And I will say from the get-go here that so much of what you talk about is exactly the experience I've had in union spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I think the main argument you're making is that there's often union leaders that try to ventriloquize the workers to basically justify their own positions on something, or maybe, seems like you're saying, to justify how they don't actually engage and have democratic structures in their union. So you want to just lay out for our listeners basically your main arguments of this piece?
Yeah, I think that that is definitely the case. And I think, I mean, the way you just described it makes it sound like people are often doing this with ill intent. And I think sometimes that is true. I also think it is often just bad organizing, not for any malicious intent. But essentially the argument that I was trying to make in the article or the piece was that decision-making and like democratic practices in unions in particular, but also other membership organizations, have to be deeply connected to organizing structures. And so we often don't actually have the most democratic decision-making because we don't have organization to tap into within our unions. So that means that people then either make sloppy decisions and just say, sure, I'm sure people will be fine with that. And then they find out their members disagree. Or they will say, our members would never support us taking a political stand on something like that. We can't even try because we're afraid of blowback. Or what I think is actually maybe the most common is we just don't push ourselves to have a more ambitious agenda because we're only thinking about where our members right now, not where could they be through organizing. And so I think that's the thing that really struck me and what inspired me to write this was that I was at the Labor for Single Payer digital conference. And you just hear so many people in unions say, like, my union would never go for this. Like, we are so wedded to our really like, you know, Cadillac plan union health benefits that we've negotiated. There's no way I'm going to be able to get my fellow union members or my union leadership, or maybe they are union leadership and they think they can't get their members on board with moving to a Medicare for all system. And it's because we don't really, A, we don't know like where are our people? What do they think actually? And B, what would they think after we had an organizing conversation where we've actually asked people's experiences about the health system, educated them on what would a single payer system even look like, since most people don't know, and then asked them to participate in some action to help win it. And if we aren't doing those things, then we actually don't know, we can't answer the question of how our members would feel about things. So I'm basically advocating for, I mean, really we have to start to just build the organizing structures and then use those organizing structures to push ourselves to think about like, what's the actual solution that we want here? What would really build the world that we want for ourselves and for our members and for the working class? And we're going to have to move people. I think that was the last piece of the argument is that often we think about democracy as just a snapshot in time. How do people feel right now? Instead of if people had access to all of the information and political analysis that would help them to make decisions, then how do they feel? And if we're not engaged in that process, then we've actually cut out a really significant stage of democracy. So yeah, and I think, you know, there's so many reasons to do all of these things, but what motivates me to do all of that is when we build all those structures to be able to ask these questions, we're going to build better, stronger unions, and we're also going to be fighting and demanding the things that we actually want, rather than just settling for things that we think we can get in the status quo.
Well, with that, I really want to thank you for your time and having this conversation. It's really great.
It was so fun.
Yeah, I had fun too. I hope that we can have you again sometime.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. I gotta be someone.
That's it for this edition of the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, our roundup of highlights from just a few of the more than 100 Labor Radio shows and podcasts that make up the Labor Radio Podcast Network. We've got links to all the network shows at laborradionetwork.org, including complete versions of the shows you heard today. You can also find the shows by using the hashtag LaborRadioPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Labor Radio Podcast Weekly was edited this week by Chris Garlock and myself, produced by Chris Garlock, and our social media guru, as always, is Harold Phillips. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at LaborRadioNet. Find out more on our website at laborradionetwork.org. Before we go, I have to say, we really hope you enjoy this show, as well as any of the other Labor Radio podcast shows we've introduced you to. Please help spread the word about the amazing and growing world of labor radio and podcast shows. Like the show and share it on social media. Sonic solidarity, if you will. Thanks in advance. For the Labor Radio Podcast Weekly, this is Chris Bangert Drowns, urging you to stay active and, of course, stay tuned to your local labor radio podcast show.